Well, hello and welcome to ASI Cast number 142. I'm ASI's Research Director, Richard Marks, and in today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by none other than George Ivy, a name that many of you will know as he is CEO and Executive Director of the Media Ratings Council, or the MRC, in the United States. So, welcome to the podcast, George.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard. Happy to be here.
Now, I think most of our listeners have come across the MRC in some capacity before over the last couple of decades, but just for the uninitiated, could you summarize what your mission is at MRC?
Sure. Simply stated, our mission is basically to seek for the media industry in the United States measurement services that are valid, reliable, and effective. The way we do that is we have two major areas of focus. The first one is setting standards for how media is measured. And then the second is, and this is really our biggest work cycle, is to conduct audits of organizations that measure media to figure out whether they're in compliance with our standards. And when established through our audits, we allow the organizations to apply our double checkmark seal to their research, essentially kind of like the good housekeeping seal of approval for the media industry, recognizing that they comply with our standards. So we basically just set standards and conduct audits. We're a very simple organization. Those are the only really two things that we do principally.
So an example of the standards you set might be the a couple of years ago, the setting of a minimum duration and viewability for online video, whereas the ongoing work would be examples of your auditing or withdrawing the audit temporarily from companies like Nielsen or Comscore, etc., in the States.
Both of those are really good examples. We've set a number of standards. So we're pretty well known for the viewability standard, which the viewable impression standard, which we set many years ago, actually. It's been longer. Time flashes by, but it's been quite a while since we set that
That's the
standard.
pandemic for you, yeah.
Yes. And we've set viewability standards in all kinds of environments, like mobile and desktop and for video and display and things like that. But we also set things like how you filter for invalid traffic and fraud, location measurement, which is a very difficult and sometimes area that has a lot of dirty data in it that needs to be cleaned out. We've been working in things like connected TV to set standards in game advertising. All these are all recent standards issued. And Richard, today we're actually releasing, posting publicly our outcome measurement standard, which is a brand new genre of standards that we've embarked on, because usually we've been setting standards for exposure measurement. But this is the first of its kind, as far as we know, anywhere, where we've established standards for the measurement of data quality attribution and outcome measurement metrics. So it's a big standard that we just are releasing today.
Oh, that's really good timing. We'll put a link to that in our show notes because that sounds like it's hot off the press
Very hot.
in
And you
terms of
mentioned the Nielsen work. Yes, that is an example of the audit cycle that we have. So we conduct audits of well over 100 measurement products of various kinds and various metrics across different media types. So not only television like Nielsen television was, but digital and out of home, print, and all kinds of media audience measurements. So there's a bunch of audits that we do. They're required to be conducted annually if a company achieves accreditation. And it's a very big work effort to continue to validate products, especially in today's dynamic, changing measurement environment.
Now, you mentioned new platforms and new forms of advertising there. I think in-game advertising is clearly a huge growth area at the moment. Another is smart TVs and the data that's generating. I think you identified connected TVs as one of your priorities for the next 5 years. What are the main challenges around the data coming from that source?
Lots of challenges. First of all, a severe lack of standardization. The MRC sets measurement standards at a very broad level. How do you measure certain metrics, associated with connected TV? Things like how do you measure an impression? How do you filter? At what time is the proper moment to measure an impression? So, for example, just to measure a base impression, that ad had to be beginning to render on the screen. We have a concept called begin to render, which defines the moment for a base ad impression. And then we even build on that, which, as you mentioned, things like viewable impressions. I mean, you can have an impression that's measured, but it's not yet viewable. Then you can have a viewable impression that has certain parameters associated with it, which we've defined, et cetera. So in CTV, there are significant challenges with establishing that in a standardized way. Some of our traditional measurement tools that we rely on in digital, for example, like JavaScript, not necessarily present and usable in this environment. It's a highly pixelated environment. People are relying on pixels to measure and determine events, and that can be challenging in when you want to do things like viewability measurement because of the lack of intelligence associated with, for example, just the pixel-oriented measurement. Connected TV is so those kinds of standards. There's a lack of that. We've been trying to establish that at a measurement level. But then there are also standards below that, interoperability, base technology standards that are largely unaddressed from a standardization perspective. They need to be shored up. We have a close working relationship with organizations like the Tech Lab, et cetera, that help with those areas. So that's work that we've been encouraging. To interlock with our measurement standards to clean up the environment in general. So connected TV, there's a lot of work to be done there, which is why we've identified it as a priority.
What about turning impressions into actual impacts? So there's a lot of work going on with models, AI, machine learning, and algorithms to turn those impressions into actual or virtual human beings or multiple human beings, particularly in front of connected TV sets. Is that something that's you can get involved in to regulate, or are we getting quite into areas of IP and black boxes and opinions as opposed to hard facts?
No, we're square on trying to hit that head on, right? We think that's critical to standardize or attempt to standardize, bring rigor into those kinds of estimation processes. That's one reason why I mentioned earlier we've issued this outcome measurement standard, because that standard has a lot of content in it related to data quality, related to attribution, which are I'll call it base processes associated with starting to develop outcomes and impact measurement. So that standard is critical in this area. We've already got organizations approaching MRC to audit that type of process. And you're correct, it involves things like machine learning and algorithms and empirical studies to develop evidence around how you model audiences and impacts in those environments. We've got extensive experience with this. In all of the areas that we audit, machine learning is becoming highly relevant. Think about invalid traffic and fraud filtration as an example. You look at traffic, you try to learn from traffic and the attributes associated with traffic and develop tools to identify when something looks like it might be invalid or fraudulent versus where something looks like it's legitimate. In those environments, machine learning has been extant for, you know, many years. So we have at MRC, the staff and the CPA firms that we work with to conduct audits, they have very extensive experience with this. They even have specialists in this that work on our behalf in our audits to look at the efficacy of those processes. So it's a big component. But it's not a new component, Richard. That's an important thought. We have very extensive experience. We're applying that experience in consistent ways in these new environments, measurement environments that are evolving.
I know that recently you commented that you weren't keen to appear in front of Congress again, because obviously what you're doing is so important. Sometimes it becomes a political issue. I think one of the last times you did that, you were explaining the concept of pressing buttons on people meters. Isn't one of the big challenges now how you explain to a non-expert how measurement actually works as things get more and more complex and driven by things like AI and algorithms?
Oh, it certainly is. You know, you might be referring to a recent quote from me, but let me just explain the context around that, because we don't run from the government. We were formed actually at the request of the U.S. government. We're highly cooperative with the government. Not that we seek them out. We don't do that. But if the government calls or lands on our doorstep, we're highly cooperative. But what I was doing at that time was kind of saying a warning, like, even in these new measurement environments, we have to really pay attention to things like measurement fairness, equality, keeping bias out of things like models. You're mentioning machine learning and modeling. We can't have measurement bias creep into that and favor certain areas of the population versus other areas of the population. So that was easy to talk about when we had a panel, and maybe we didn't install certain types of households in the panel because they were hard to get to or something like that. And that was staring everybody in the face that, oh, that's a bias. Well, in this new environment where we're working with large passive data sets and we're modeling this and strapping audience characteristics over the top of passively collected data, we have to be careful that we're not differentially hurting any segments of the population. So what I was telling people, we need to be careful as an industry. I don't want to go back and testify in front of Congress again that we didn't protect all the elements of the population that we need to protect. That's why I made that quote. But it plays right into your line of questioning. Today's measurement environment is not about necessarily just using one source of data. You're trying to combine various sources of data. You're trying to combine things like machine learning to optimize how much information you can get from that data and the accuracy of that data. And so you might be getting some information from panel to calibrate, you know, identity and measure elements of the population that aren't in the large data sets. You're getting large data sets to help with reduction of variability and build out the long tail of measurement. You're strapping on machine learning to perfect that identity, et cetera. And we have to stay attuned to all those processes, and those processes get increasingly difficult to explain because they're very intricate. And so you're right on with your question. It's a challenge for the industry to be able to explain to the people that rely on this, and this goes all the way from government to Wall Street and everything, that we're doing our job properly in this complex environment.
And then to add to the challenge over the next few years, we've also got the challenge of not just measuring within media, but measuring across media and all the potential politics that involved. I had a second quote from you that I'm going to quote because I loved it, that you said recently, every company I'm talking to nowadays is trying to build a panel. 2 years ago, they were telling me how useless they were. Now they're trying to build panels because they need cross-media measurements. What are the challenges beyond single media panels in building and auditing a cross-media measurement panel?
Man, it's like old school challenges. You just have very serious difficulty extracting all you want to know from panelists nowadays. There are only so many of these highly cooperative people that'll let you measure everything they do and everything they have. Most people in the population are a little bit more sensitive than that. They don't want to be tracked everywhere. They might consume media on every device they use. They might have security concerns. Plus, you have regulatory environments that are evolving that are limiting your ability to track people and especially cross-attribute them in different media silos. So all of that comes together to create a difficult environment, for cross-media measurement. And it has to be done very thoughtfully. There are projects that we're involved in. For example, in the UK, there's an Origin project that's being run by ISBA and others. In the US, the ANA has a cross-media project. A couple of years ago, we set a cross-media measurement standard, which was pretty landmark. It's kind of like this outcome standard. It was the first time something like that had been written, and it really enabled all these projects to evolve because then there was guidance put down. But the truth is, to build a panel that's cross-media that allows you to populate things like the identity across television environments, legacy television, connected television, large digital platforms who don't communicate with each other. Like if I want to determine today, I did an ad, how did it perform on Google and how did it perform on Meta? Those silos don't talk to each other. And we're trying to build bridges with these projects for how they all talk together. So it's a complex environment we're wading into. We've set some standards. Panels are sexy again, because they provide insight into the intersection of all these consumer touch points. And if you do that well, and it's super difficult because you're trying to gather a lot of information from the panelists now, much wider than it used to be, super difficult to have a panel that serves that need. That's a real issue.
Mm. The cross-media obviously is a really political issue. Another issue that seems to be quite hot in the US specifically at the moment is what's being referred to as the alt-currency movement.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing you must have mixed feelings about this, because on the one hand, yeah, it's more work for you, which I guess is good. On the other hand, it is raising some eyebrows in other markets about how media companies may be able to pick and choose which ratings they like the most, or how would an alt currency system work, or is that still very much to be decided?
Well, I think it's nascent. You're right about the mixed feelings. Competition is good, new measurement approaches is good, all of that is kind of motherhood and apple pie. But for Americans, at least, apple pie is a phrase we use.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say is it comes with challenges. We hear constantly from advertisers, for example, seeking guidance. You know, we took an action last year to suspend Nielsen's accreditation, as you mentioned, of its television measurement service in national and local. That was not an easy action for MRC. Those services have been accredited for decades. But at one point, we had to kind of look introspectively and say, our one job in life is to tell people whether a measurement product meets standards or not. And at that point in time, it was a conclusion with the base of an objective audit report that there were significant standards deviations. So we did what we did. Unfortunately, what happened is then there were no accredited television products for the marketplace to rely on. We knew that going in. That was going to be difficult. And people have come forward and said, what should we do? MRC, what is the guidance now? And we're saying, well, let's concentrate on services that are trying to be transparent. Companies that are in the audit process, sharing information and conducting audits with the MRC that our members and the industry can get access to. The industry can get access through the presence or absence of our seal. Our members can actually see the gory details of an audit report. Let's concentrate on those. And so we're going out to the alt currency providers and we're saying, come into the audit process. We don't know whether all your stuff works or it doesn't work, but we'll work with you to audit it, illuminate it, and you know where you might need improvements, let's go do it and get it accredited. So we're doing that. Unfortunately, Richard, not all the providers are jumping into the audit process. They want to go sell to the marketplace and say, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, but they're not ready to come to the MRC and say, audit X, Y, and Z. So when we go to them and say, let's be audited, they say, oh, we're not ready for that yet. Well, you're selling. So are you ready or are you not ready? If you're not ready, tell your customers you're not quite ready yet. And then we'll set a time. So we're going through that process with them, trying to define when companies that want to be alternative currency can be audited. Because if you want to be alternative currency, you should be audited. Currency should be audited. No question about it. So that's what we're trying to do. The minute practically that we removed accreditation from Nielsen, Nielsen came forward and reapplied for accreditation, has been trying to regain accreditation. And other services like ComScore, who's been through audits, hasn't achieved accreditation yet. I give them a lot of credit that they've been pursuing audits with very little positivity as outcomes, but they're still at the table trying to get their service accredited. And we're moving towards a ComScore audit review this fall, which should be a very, very informative big event. So that's developing. We're auditing some aspects of iSpot. We're speaking to other services about becoming audited, and some of them are making commitments to us, even though they might be out there in 2023. So this alt currency movement does interject a lot of complexity, but there's a lot of learning. There's a lot of innovation, expanding into larger data sets, bringing in passive data, adjusting it in different ways, creating things like VID models that we need to assess for neutrality and efficacy. But yet, if they work, very, very good thing, because they're privacy compliant. You know, so there's a lot of moving parts to it.
I guess this multiple currency possibility really goes back to your original mandate from Congress, because the current interpretation or ongoing interpretation of US antitrust law is that a European style joint industry currency would not be legal, that people want to be able to pick and choose. And therefore, as I understand it, you were set up to make sure that the services that were available did comply to acceptable standards for the market. And I know you're clearly a US company as a result, mandated by US law, but you mentioned your involvement, for example, with Origin, the cross-media initiative in the UK, and you work very closely with companies like Google and Facebook that clearly have global footprints. So is your remit US only, US-based companies abroad, or is it wider than that? What's your international mission, as it were?
Very good question. First of all, I like to tell people that the MRC has the world's worst business model. We don't make any money, not a penny, from audits. We can audit people until we're purple. That's not a source of funding for MRC. It makes a good source of funding for our CPA auditors. They get paid based on the time and auditing that they do. But MRC derives no funding from an audit. Our sole source of funding is membership dues. If you want to be a member of MRC, every member pays the same amount, doesn't matter whether they're PNG or a small organization. that is how we survive, how we increase our staff. This really creates a very strong U.S. focus in the MRC, because we're not built to, nor do we want to, kind of take over the world from a measurement standpoint. We don't even think that's right. People don't want a bunch of gringos marching into their market and telling them how to do measurement. But what is happening, it's undeniable, is that the work that we're doing is catching a lot of attention internationally. When we set these standards and when we're conducting audits for organizations that are global, people notice that and they want to participate. So we have organizations like ISBA, the ACA in Canada, the WFA, large global marketers, large global media companies that become members of MRC, and they want to see the products we audit in the US, and they also want to encourage us to drive as much measurement consistency as we can outside the US. And we do that by propagating our standards and making them available to anyone who wants to use them. So if you're in the UK and you want to use our viewability standard, you just go to the website, you can copy it and use it. And if you're in Germany and you want to do that, you can do the same thing. And we're encouraging the use of that. Not that everybody has to, because you might want to modify it for your market environment, but it's at least a starting point that we've spent significant effort developing. Significant effort. That's one way for us to encourage that. When we audit an organization like Google, for example, and we audit them for all sorts of measurement, ad serving, we audit them for brand safety, for example, where we've set another standard. Those are global audits, because Google applies a centralized process over any traffic that they encounter worldwide. So if we audit in the US Google's impression measurement or view, you know, their true view measurement or something like that, which is their viewability process, that actually is auditing all their activity globally, and it's natural. That's not the case everywhere. Like when we audit Nielsen's television measurement in the US because it's a US panel, etc., that doesn't mean anything to whatever measurement they might have outside the US. So you have to look at the structure of the service. But many of our audits can be global nowadays. And if a company wants to understand that, they can become a member, or they can don't even have to be a member. They can make inquiries and we can explain whether our audit might be applicable of a product outside the US. So in that way, we've been sort of naturally propagating across territories that are outside the US. We also have members that will lobby us to go do work outside the US directly. So, for example, right now we conduct audits in China and we conduct audits in Mexico. Mexico is a very large market next to the US, where a lot of our US members have business interests. And they've asked us to audit, for example, the television research in Mexico, and we do. In China, maybe, you know, a very, very large growth market, our members have lobbied us to go in China and work in the digital measurement areas and try to help straighten that out. And so many members approached us about it, we do it. But then again, there are other countries. Over the last 5 or 6 years, we've literally had maybe 50 countries come to us and say, will you do audits in our country? The problem is we don't have a ton of members that want to do audits in many of these countries. But where there's critical mass, we'll consider it, like in China and Mexico. Mm. Right now, for example, there are a lot of people talking about India within my measurement, saying, is there anything you guys can do in India? And I'm not that acquainted. I obviously know people and some of the environment, and there have been controversies in India, but right now we're not ready to jump into India. We wouldn't do that without establishing, you know, the proper relationships. But I'm just telling you that big countries like that, those discussions do happen with our in our membership to go try to extend some kind of an olive branch to that country and see if there are ways we can help. So that's how it works.
Well, finally, you've recently, after I think 22 years at the MRC, you've signed up for another 5 years. Like Captain Kirk's 5-year mission. How would you define what would be success to you at the end of that 5 years? And also, I think, what would you see as the biggest single opportunity and I guess threat to media measurement coming up across this new mission?
Very good question. It's going to be hard to define success. In our environment, success in a way is survival. We need to keep the MRC relevant to the industry. We need to keep our process rigorous so that we provide value in our audits, because easy audits, rubber stamps, pay for play, all that kind of stuff that might be out there, that isn't good. When you come to MRC to be accredited, it's a real audit, it's in depth, and it's challenging. We have to keep it that way. So there are a lot of pressures that we need to deal with, keeping audits affordable, but yet highly rigorous. Dealing with today's evolving privacy environment, which is necessary, but creates measurement challenges. We could do a whole nother podcast about, what are the challenges interlocking with measurement associated with privacy. There's a ton of them. But basically, success is to continue to do our mission, deal with this alt currency movement in a rational and fair manner. Illuminate quality to, our constituents, continue to expand our standards portfolio into emerging metrics and keep it modern. For example, in fraud filtration, the bad guys are moving every day and they move faster than us. Don't let anybody ever tell you we're winning the fight against fraud, because we're not. They just change and we have to catch up with it. They move to where the dollars move. For example, a good example of that is CTV, where we have to nail that stuff down, and we've been working on that. So success is really to continue to perpetuate what we do, drive standards, keep relevant, drive rigorous auditing, and encourage innovation, not stifle it through these processes. That's how I define it, keeping our members engaged, believing MRC is relevant, trying to get more measurement consistency across the globe in a reasonable way, non-authoritative. We're not trying to force it, but it sure does help advertisers when measurement consistency is present and it's rigorous. Those are some of the things that I would use to define success. I can tell you, Richard, it's harder than it looks. There's a lot of moving parts to all this to keep track of. We have an excellent team at MRC. They're all highly trained, super good at what they do, but a lot of people don't understand. We only have 7 people at MRC because our funding, situation is challenging because of the independence we have to have from the products we audit. So that's really how I define success. I know that's not an easy answer, but there are a lot of parts to it, but I constantly look at that. So does our team, so do our members, the leadership of our organization. And I'm happy that they renewed my contract for 5 years, but I'm sure at the end of 5 years, if they keep me or somebody else takes it over, they're going to have a lot of work to do, just like I have a lot of work to do now.
Well, it's the first time we've had you on the podcast, but hopefully not the last, because it's been a fascinating conversation. I think I've counted nearly a dozen different topics that speakers and panels are going to be touching on at our upcoming measurement conference in Nice in November. So thanks for setting a bit of an agenda for our discussion there. In the meantime,
Great.
thanks for being on the podcast, George.
No problem at all. And I'd welcome reappearing if there's anything that you want to discuss in the future, or you see anything we're doing and you go, "What are these guys doing?" We'll be happy to come on and talk to you about it.
We'll give you a call. Thanks, George.
Thank you very much.